You know what is kind of funny? Like when I did this, and this could probably just stay in the skiff because it might be funny. But when I kind of laid out that Europe thesis of like where I think the geopolitical winds are going, that was actually one of the things when I like wrote out my notes for that, where I was sitting here, I was like, I feel like we're finally at a time where we can say this. Like it was, yeah. It's like one of those things where it's like, I don't feel like I would have been comfortable saying that 2 years ago and talking, which I have felt that for many years,
yeah,
about the Europe's thing.
At least questioning's like, why are we in this position? And yeah. Then all of a sudden there is a large field that is now open.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could say the R word. You can talk shit about Europeans.
You know, it is this thing where it's like, it is a thing where it's like the Europeans might even be a further rail than the Jews that you can't talk about in some ways, which is weird.
At least when it's Churchill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because sure. that pulls into the mythology, and they're all mixed together. Like there's a Venn diagram that exists there. Good Kamala Harris Venn diagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
She ruined Venn diagrams. Yeah,
forever.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting. But 100%. Like, I felt this for a long time, and I remember on Tucker Carlson's Mike Benz podcast, where Tucker had just finished his interview or his conversation with Piers Morgan in Saudi Arabia. Like they had just done a sit down, and then his next episode was with Mike Benz, and Tucker was like, Tucker said to Mike Benz something along the lines of, "Yeah, I don't think I've ever met a British journalist that wasn't an intelligence asset." And it was like, well, he's clearly talking about Piers Morgan.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right.
Which is interesting too. Piers Morgan is, I feel like Piers Morgan's show is now the Overton window, where it's like, you have, this is all of the allowable opinion within the current dialogue. And it's like, it goes all the way where the libertarian dialogue is Scott Horton and Dave Smith, their reoccurring guests, which is awesome. It's great to see.
Yeah.
But then, and then you have like all these people over here, and like this, he is the one that has shaped the internet, the internet dialogue.
The internet Overton window. So shaped by,
because he brings on all
God
the,
help us.
He brings in all the internet people.
Yeah,
like he's the only person that's transitioned over to like doing the traditional news thing with like the panel discussions into the internet.
Yeah.
Like he's the only person that's in it. And his show's actually really good.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing about it. But you're like,
I mean, when it's not terrible, it's really good.
Yeah.
it oscillates between,
it has the
God, what am I doing with my life?
It has the shouting matches and things like that. But like it's like a very good hour long, gets some interesting dialogue going. Sometimes the dialogue is very what you're used to on those, like they have 12 panelists on the screen thing, but like it's like actually pretty good.
I just wish they're 2 hours. That's the thing that bothers me is like, if you it's easy to argue like that for an hour, but 2 hours is very difficult. I want to see some marathon arguments here, and like, and then hopefully you'll be able to at some point, maybe after the 1 hour mark, get past the yelling at each other and personal insults and actually get to actually doing some substance.
Yeah.
Because they do get there sometimes, but man, killer.
Anyways.
Well, welcome to the skiff. This is a secure containment information facility, our members only program. You will get one look at this and then we'll disappear into our catalog of members only content. Because this one's probably going to
this will probably be a public one.
Yeah. It's got to be. And a lot of reason doing it is because we had one on the Douglas Murray event. We had one on Douglas Murray, went really well, had some really great views and comments and stuff like that. So don't forget to comment below. Let us know what you think. Like, subscribe. And if you got this one chance, so you better be a member if you don't get through the whole thing, because there's going to be a lot of good content here. And if you don't want it to disappear on you, you got to become a member. So,
yeah, we also, we get a crazy in. Like the skiffs that never reach public light, we get a little crazy in sometimes.
Also, you can get the spice.
There's a lot of things where we have to sit there as like, is that one ever going to go public? I don't think so.
Well, let's dive in. We're talking about Constantine Kissin' Boys on the...
Which the podcast is a joke that I made on a previous skiff episode,
yeah,
right?
Like, inside.
Like I think
we're gonna make that go viral because this guy is so lame. You know, I mean, he's so bad. You know,
well, it's interesting to me because we have this dialogue around the Dave Smith Douglas Murray debate, right? Where there's like this talk about expertise, and there's all these people that kind of made their names going against the expert class kind of during like the woke stuff that are now calling for standardization of expertise and stuff like that. And it's the Constantine guy, like it's one of these things, like I get the appeal of Douglas Murray oftentimes. And I don't mean to be rude actually. Like if you like Constantine, then you like Constantine. But like to me, a lot of his like rise has felt almost unearned, because my understanding is that he became big because he was a comic that refused to sign a permission slip at a comedy club.
permission slip.
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of like this thing where you can't, in order to perform at this comedy club, you have to, you can't make racist jokes, you can't make sexist jokes.
Oh, really?
Like, so it was like this woke thing.
Oh, yeah. Wow, okay.
And that's where, so like him and his buddy, Francis, I forget his name, they kind of became popularized because of that.
Right.
In like 2018, 2019 timeframe.
Okay.
And then they started this podcast called Trigonometry.
Right.
And Trigger, you know, like and stuff. And it's been like, it's been this thing where it's like, I always feel weird about those people that have just come into prominence off of that one very specific thing.
Yeah.
And like, and it's like, not to throw shade at certain people, but you have like certain people that may be in like very niche cultural issues that were really hot button for like a very momentary moment of time. People like someone like a Riley Gaines or something like that, where like they pop up into this one thing and now it's like they're everywhere and we're supposed to like really care about their opinion about all these other topics,
and well, Riley Gaines is pretty narrowly focused, but you could see that in other places.
But like it's one of those things where it's like this very niche moment and then explosion in popularity and is now like a public speaker at all this stuff type
we're
of
like
stuff,
what does
right?
Hawk Tua think about Iran, you know,
and that's kind of how I feel about like because like somebody like Douglas Murray, despite my disagreements, I've read all of his books except for his most recent one. So like I am familiar with Douglas Murray. I understand the appeal of Douglas Murray and like, and he has been very multifaceted and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like there is an earned elevation for like, for mindshare that exists there.
Right.
Right. Where I don't feel that necessarily with,
well, I think Constant Christian is more similar to Dave Smith in that he's a comedian who's political and became more political after he had that experience. And then now,
but with Dave Smith, I feel like it's more earned because I have followed Dave Smith for over a decade.
Yes.
So I've seen the trajectory and maybe I'm missing something.
Well,
on
you're
the
not British. Like this maybe, is a British phenomenon.
Maybe
that
that's
because it's in English. We're kind of inheriting it. And maybe then there was some crossover. And I do wonder, you know, like it seems like he's dropped the comedy altogether. Well, Dave hasn't. Right.
Yeah.
And there's something there as he's the guy who's arguing for expertise, which is a point that he makes. So let's dive into it. So he put out a article, and then he does this thing where he puts out articles and then he reads them as his video content. We're going to dive into it. Not sure how far we're going to get, but we're going to go as far as we can.
Prepare for the unprecedented. I'm about to admit I was wrong. For years, I've celebrated the rise of new media.
I was buzzing through some stuff.
No, just keep doing it. Don't care. No.
Well, no. I want to. I was buzzing through.
You slow down.
Yeah, I'll put it at a normal pace for us.
I was like, when did he turn into Ben Shapiro?
Yeah, exactly. That was were gonna.
Hey, looking, I was wrong.
We were gonna cut up a bunch of stuff, and then we're just like, it's better to just go through it all. I think, and we'll take it piece by piece. So okay.
Much more ominous now.
Prepare for the unprecedented. I'm about to admit I was wrong. For years, I've celebrated the rise of new media and its impact on our ability to seek truth, challenge false narratives peddled by legacy institutions, and transform the way we conduct our public debate. The rationale behind my thought process seemed solid. After all, the medium is the message. The reason I thought our conversations about politics, culture, and entertainment had become so fake was the rapidly shrinking soundbite and a media elite more interested in winning than learning. Journalism, academia, and politics merged into a monoculture whose consensus rested primarily on the vigorous inhalation of gases emanating from their own backsides into which they'd firmly inserted their heads. I don't know anyone who voted for Trump, was their mantra. Far from being a confession of ignorance and a lack of perspective, this phrase was uttered with pride at dinner parties to signal membership of the elite class. The response from this contingent to the sequential dismantling of their core assumptions about the way the world works was an attempt to use credentialism to make reality go away. Experts think vaccinating newborns against COVID is essential. Now pipe down, mask up, and follow the science, TM. In decades past, absent the ability to make their voices heard, the proles would have had to grumble away about Big Pharma in obscurity, as people, mostly hippie lefties, had been doing for ages. But thanks to the technological revolution, which reduced the cost of running a major broadcasting channel from millions of dollars to the price of a smartphone, the era of gatekeeping was well and truly over. The discredited mainstream media continued to peddle lie after lie in an attempt to keep its political opponents from governing and being re-elected. But it then faced a powerful counterweight. Elon Musk ended the regime of censorship and enforcement bias in the digital public square of Twitter, declaring, "You are the media now," as major podcasts and YouTube shows secured audiences most mainstream media outlets can now only dream of.
Pause it down.
So, are there no gatekeepers now? Because there's still gatekeepers, right? There's still levels to this stuff, right? If you're going to grow your podcast, you need to have an engaged audience that you've built off of algorithms and advertising and such. And then you got to have people who are larger than you have you on their show. Like, that seems like the avenue in which things grow. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, there's still gatekeepers. It's just not centralized gatekeepers, right?
Right. Well, in a lot of ways, and this is kind of what this argument is all circulating around with Jordan Peterson, Douglas Murray, Constantine on this, is Joe Rogan is now the platform, mm-hmm. right? There's a few other platforms that are also kind of the platforms, right. But Joe Rogan is the central one. And so a lot of the conversation is around him.
What's his responsibility?
Yeah.
To make sure he doesn't platform somebody.
What is your responsibility?
Who has an audience that of which 4% are psychopaths.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there's also a dynamic here too that's really interesting thing too, because a lot of these guys they're talking about, like the Jordan Peterson example in particular comes to mind, where Jordan Peterson's talking about like Nick Fuentes. It's like, right. How are you to decide if Nick Fuentes is on your... It's like Nick Fuentes has never been on there.
Yeah,
so it's right, like it's like right. A conversation of like, what are we talking
well,
about?
Well, right there's now, right? There's a disconnect that it seems like.
It's like, is Nick Fuentes a psychopath? Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, I think he thinks that the racism as seen by the Groypers is an example of narcissism and, you know,
trollish behavior, is that,
right? Yeah. And most of them being anonymous kind of fits into that category. Mm-hmm. You can make that case, but the question is like, but what are we talking about? What we're talking about is Dave Smith versus Douglas Murray.
Yeah.
Two of which are people who, I mean, if you're going to fit, jumps onto bandwagons and then champions them for narcissistic purposes and personal profit motive, is not Dave Smith. He's been doing the same damn thing for 15 years now.
Yeah, like I've been following Dave Smith since he had no audience at all. Yeah. Like over a decade I followed him. It was back before Robbie was ever on a show, like back when Mike Brancatelli was his co-host. Yeah. Like I've followed the trajectory of Dave Smith for a long time. He was my go-to podcast every single episode. Like he did two a week and that was my current events podcast for many years. Mm. And that's the thing is a lot of these guys, Douglas Murray and stuff like that, they're acting like, it's like you were a comedian and now all of a sudden you're just spending all of your time talking about Israel. And it's like, no, he's been this, like you can go back and watch him on Fox News and on CNN when he had contracts with them back on Red Eye, on Gutfeld's show on Red Eye, yeah, and back when Kennedy. It was SE Cup's show on, you know, like, mm-hmm. like he's been this guy that is a comedian, but also a political commentator for some time.
Yeah.
They're fighting these weird, obscure straw men,
and that's also where you know that they don't know what they're doing, right? They're just throwing out bullshit arguments because they haven't done the research, they haven't listened to Murder Made, they don't know who Ian Carroll is.
They don't have to. That's what Douglas Murray said.
That's what they're claiming,
right. I don't have to listen to revisionist nonsense.
Yeah,
it's just like,
right.
Well, you should maybe if you're going to spend all your time critiquing this, you should probably have listened to it.
And then know who your opponent is. Know who Dave Smith is.
Like, you've never been.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you've never listened?
Yeah, right.
What are we doing here?
Exactly.
Anyways,
diagnosis of the mainstream press is accurate here.
Yeah, I agree with kind of the assessment here of what's been going on.
The question is where this is going to go is wait for the butt.
Well, and he framed this whole thing up saying, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So he's like laying out, this was my attitude about all this stuff, but now we have to have some standards or whatever. Yeah, it's like.
By the time of the last year's presidential election in America, the rise of new media had become undeniable, with many rightly calling it the podcast election. Curious, open-minded, inquisitive podcasters, unrestrained by the need to comply with corporate media message discipline and social media censorship, were finally able to speak freely, seek the truth, and debate controversial ideas in good faith in front of grateful audiences of millions. So far, so wonderful. After all, what could go wrong with democratizing information? Well, as it turns out, quite a lot. Just as the assumptions of the elite class were proved wrong by the actions of their fellow citizens during the era of Trump, Brexit, and COVID, the assumptions some of us held about the future of the media are now crumbling before our very eyes. With politics becoming the primary form of entertainment in Western society, More of us now get our news and opinions from entertainers rather than serious commentators, and just as importantly, we often struggle to tell the difference between the two. Now, having transitioned from a career in comedy to my current role as writer, interviewer, and political commentator, I can hardly complain about the meshing of culture, politics, and entertainment.
Glad he admits that,
and
actually.
I am not complaining. I'm merely pointing out that the incentive structures and thought patterns we would typically associate with the entertainment business are not the same as those we would expect to see in journalism and academia. This difference was...
So do we have a different standard, right? So in when when he is drawing on his opinion about Ukraine war, he is drawing, I assume, on serious experts from the neoconservative and from the more interventionist schools, right? As seen in his debate with Dave Smith, he didn't just say, I know all these things because I've done the individual research. He appeals to other people and to the underlying logics that he then consumed from them. Dave Smith does the same thing, but he's much better actually citing his sources. What's the problem here?
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where, you know, this was a really frustrating thing in the Douglas Murray debate, quote unquote, with Dave Smith.
Non-debate.
It was just like, it was kind of like, what was this? Despite being such like a watershed moment, where every time, like Douglas Murray did this thing where every time Dave was like, well, this important official said this.
Yeah.
Douglas Murray would be like, oh, you're appealing to authority.
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, if we're having a conversation about what people were doing at this time period to be able to contextualize the conversation, like he wasn't using, like that was the problem, was like Douglas never had any actual arguments. Like if you're going to be arguing and saying, well, this Dave Smith guy and all the people that are kind of spouting off the same ideas are getting all these things wrong, like you should address the things that are going wrong.
Demonstrate your expertise.
That's the thing that I'm missing. Yeah. It was actually, I was listening to Robert Murphy's podcast, and him and his co-host were talking about this, where it's like, Robert Murphy was talking about is like, you know, like I'm more in the Dave Smith camp because libertarian and all this stuff, but I was actually really looking forward to this because I followed Douglas Murray for a long time. And I was like, I want somebody to challenge Dave because I think that would be really interesting. And I can kind of like piece some ideas together and think about like, oh, what are the solutions to this here? And then you watch the Joe Rogan thing and you're just like, there was no actual arguments against Dave. It was just like, how dare there's these like, standards and these practices, gatekeeping, all this stuff. And it's just like, this is the problem that our side has with your side, Constantine. Yeah. It's just like, is like all you're doing is putting up barriers and you're not actually offering any critiques of our arguments at all. Like, and that's the frustrating thing about this entire dynamic. And then you start doing this stuff on Twitter and these like little, like kind of like pussy Twitter feud stuff. It's like, like, and James Lindsay is the guy who is the most atrocious on this. It's just like, have you done? It is like the most bad faith thing I've ever seen.
100%. And there's like, there's definitely, and people are calling it the podcast wars.
Yeah.
Right? Like that there's now a debate about how should we think about podcasts? Should we trust the audience to be able to sort out what a joke is and what a serious statement is? Do they have the capacity to understand this is a perspective that I'm drawing on other people from, and I will try to cite when I can, but sometimes I'm going to be like, this is what I think. And that's going to be based upon something. In fact, all your academics and your professors and all your experts in the field, of which Douglas isn't one, but you know, they are all doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. They are all reading books and talking about it with
and
other people.
Making interpretations of it too. Like there are events that happened and then there's interpretations around that.
And even more important, that value judgments.
Yep.
Value judgments about what's important, about whose standard really counts, about all these other things. So, and especially when talking about foreign policy, especially when talking about government policy, what really counts is the value judgment. Right, you get into the facts, you debate the facts, and then you come up with a value judgment. And it's the difference in value judgment that leads people into different camps. It's not the facts are just buttressing for that, of helping you understand what's going on for that case. And then should the people who are listening, are they qualified to judge your value judgments? Of course they are, because that's the one thing we all can do, is say, I like that case or I don't like that case. They share the same values I do or they don't share the same values I do. Right. And that's where we're actually should be arguing at, not at this level of, well, are you, you know, all of this argumentation that they're bringing to the front that really just strawmans the opposition and then tries to claim that they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, and it's this thing, too, where the straw man, because the Daryl Cooper straw man is the thing that's constantly brought up in this. And it's where you're just like, OK, there's some propaganda going on here. There's some bad faith argumentation there. But yeah. It's just like. If you watch the Tucker Carlson interview and you're coming away with him saying that like Hitler did nothing wrong or something like you are operating in bad faith. Like yes. The exact argument that he was making was there's an argument to be made that Churchill did things that made the war worse than it would have been. It's like it could have been like the war could have been kind of staved off and not as terrible. It could have been just a Poland thing. Like It could have just been in that realm. And there's a conversation to be had there, especially for like the future of us preventing another major catastrophes in the past. Now he laced it with I rib my buddy Jocko about this because they have this Anglo-Saxon and I'm being hyperbolic. Yeah, right. And so like, And if you're leaving out the I'm being hyperbolic sometimes about this, like if you're leaving that part out of the context, like you are operating in bad faith or you're so stuck in this like religious mythology that you're in that you can't have an actual adult conversation about this. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, keep it going.
Perfectly illustrated in the recent debate between journalist and author Douglas Murray and comedian and podcaster Dave Smith on the Joe Rogan Experience, the world's biggest podcast. Officially, the full three-hour discussion was mostly about the wars in Gaza and Ukraine, with Smith being in the so-called anti-war camp and Murray being a supporter of both Israel's campaign to eliminate Hamas and Ukraine's struggle to retain its sovereignty and independence.
Not a so-called
these conflicts anti-war. And both men's positions have been debated endlessly. That part of the
Actually, speaking of that, it was also like in Douglas Murray's article about Dave Smith in the aftermath, He said, Dave Smith, who claims Jewish ancestry.
What does that even mean?
That's what that was the way that he framed Dave Smith. Like that he might not actually be Jewish.
you look at Dave Smith, you're like, if his name was Jewy McJewface, he would be like, oh, okay. You know, like, what are we doing here?
No, but that was one of those things where it's like,
I can't be bothered to know anything about my debate opposition. Blah, 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 blah.
Who claims Jewish ancestry?
What's he doing? So-called anti-war? Consistently anti-war. Oh, that's all you got to say. Like, don't be a coward. Just frame your opposition.
Man.
Discussion is less relevant here. The much more interesting fault lines were exposed on the fringes of the debate. The conversation began with a discussion of Rogan's decision to host Daryl Cooper, a man described by Tucker Carlson as America's most important popular historian. Cooper himself has the self-awareness not to own the label of historian, instead describing himself as a storyteller. His latest work is a series whose aim is to show World War II from the perspective of the Germans. To those who have studied World War II extensively, like Murray, Cooper's comments on Tucker Carlson's show and his podcast with Joe Rogan are obvious and frankly boringly familiar Nazi apologia.
Is Douglas Murray an expert on World War II? He has a literary degree.
Which is often used for storytelling.
Yeah. He's Douglas Murray is a storyteller.
He's a professional storyteller.
Yeah, he went to Ukraine and said, if we just keep giving them weapons, they're going to win this war, right? He got that story wrong, you know, a lot wrong. So what bothers me here is Daryl Cooper is extremely public about the amount of work and effort he puts into designing a podcast series on an issue that he's interested in. And he does more than I think almost anybody in the legacy press does on researching any topic. Right, he does more than many people who are commentators on those topics. From my personal experience of knowing people in the press, knowing podcasters, and seeing what he posts, that seems clear to me. When you consume his content, you'll quickly find, yeah, this guy is drawing from lots of sources. He disagrees with some. He's doing a thing. That doesn't mean he isn't a voice worth listening to.
Well, one, him and Dan Carlin are doing the same thing, is that they're taking history and they're offering a story and an interpretation of it, which I think is really what history is. Like that's all historians are. Is that they're offering like interpretations of things. Because like that's kind of what you have to do.
Because there's value judgments built into the process, right? Even if you're doing original historical research, you're still evaluating, okay, this person was self-interested, not self-interested. This is an objective thing. This guy has interests that this is counter to, so it's probably more reliable. These are all things you're doing when you're doing original historical research, even as an expert in the field doing the core work.
There's a lot of interpretations to be made of Julius Caesar, right? Yeah. Like you can interpret all the events that happened around Julius Caesar in a whole lot of different ways, mm-hmm. right? Like, and people are going to be arguing about that, you know, quite a bit. But the problem is, this is much more recent history.
Well, right? and note too here, what we're discussing is Daryl Cooper talking about a product he hasn't put out yet. We're talking about him just being asked the question, "Hey, you got this coming out?" You know, and him just kind of talking around some of these topics. And at no point is he saying, "I am a fan of the school of." Well, what's the name? The historian that he's bringing up, the Holocaust denier or whatever, yeah. or minimalist or whatever it is. Those positions, he didn't say that he supports. In fact, what he's about, I'm pretty sure, what's going to happen here, let me predict. Yeah, I saw this days ago, so I can't remember exactly what happened. But he's going to do a character assassination on Douglas, on Daryl Cooper next.
Okay, here, let's do it.
Far from being novel, the idea peddled by Cooper that Churchill was a warmonger who, quote, turned the invasion of Poland into a global war because, quote, he was funded by Zionist financiers, formed the core of wartime propaganda fabricated by Nazi spin doctor Joseph Goebbels. The argument that Cooper advances, that millions of prisoners of war and civilians died on the Eastern Front because the Nazis failed to plan properly for the invasion, is simply a lie. There's extensive documentary evidence which confirms that the reason millions of prisoners of war and civilians died on the Eastern Front is precisely because the Nazis succeeded in their plans.
Do you want to pause?
Because Murray's educated on this issue, he assumes...
Yeah, so Daryl Cooper didn't say that, right? And that's like a mashing together of quotes that are just like the Legacy Press.
Yeah.
Just like what they do to character assassinate somebody. And then misquoting him on this core issue of the camps. His case, and this is the case that you would make if you were to try to pull people back from anti-Semitism, which is that the historical evidence does have parts that indicate that they were struggling to actually plan for how they're going to feed everybody in these camps after they put them in the camps. And Cooper's values that he put into that historical documentation is doesn't matter. You put them in camps in the first place. They're your responsibility. You can't kill them or starve them to death. Both are terrible and awful. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. That's the problem. What happens when you take a population, put them in the camps? Now you own them and you're responsible for them, right? So like if that's the case, you're saying like, oh, he thinks that this is just all a big mistake. That's not what he said. You're just a character assassinating the guy without interfacing at all. And this is where the dogmatism, the religion becomes so obvious, right? It has to be only that, and there can't be any amount of questioning. And the problem with that is once you advance that dogma, you take a whole section of the population who some of them are narcissists, terrible people, as per the JBP's point. But some of them are also just people who are saying like, whoa, how do I deal with that information?
Yep.
Right. And
it's actually a point that Eric Weinstein made too recently,
yeah.
where it's just like there are a lot of like, and I don't. This is actually the area where I grapple with. Like, to me, the most honest actors, I feel like, that have come out of the whole IDW space, the intellectual dark web, have been the Weinstein brothers. Mm. I think that they're grappling with things a lot more honestly than a lot of the others are, which is just interesting. That in itself is interesting to see. Mm. But I remember on Piers Morgan with Dave Smith and Eric Weinstein, Eric was making a point of like, because he addressed like the 6 million Jews thing, which is like often a thing that the rabid
right.
people on this subject
talk about the grippers, about. Right? They're like, hey, yeah. could it possibly have been exactly 6 million. You kidding me?
That's yeah. What we're and there's like some things about math and stuff like that. And Eric himself was made a point of saying something like, you know, like we. You know, it's probably not true. Like the numbers themselves are probably not the real numbers. But then he led a question of like. But if you're like grappling with that, there's like a question of why are you grappling with that?
Right.
And that was kind of the point that he made.
It's like Tim Dillon said, it's like kind of like questioning age of consent laws. You're like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
And there's like some justification to that,
yes,
I feel like. But
right.
like there's also, as history moves on, there's probably a, we should dig a little bit deeper into some of these things too. And like, and I think there's like maybe a fine balancing line that exists
what
there.
What it is, right? What's that? I mean, especially as the cultural norms soften, as the mm-hmm. mythos that was holding out the post-World War II consensus softens, we're going to have to battle with this question of like, okay, what really went on? Mm-hmm. Because there was a time when you couldn't question things, and all of a sudden that's starting to soften, so people are going to. So if you say everyone who does that is a psychopath, you will never be able to reach the people who are doing that who aren't, mm-hmm. right? And how do you bring people back? How do you actually, if you take somebody who's bought into an anti-Semitic dogma, how do you make them not?
Well, it's also right? remember, some people you can't.
4% you can't because they're narcissistic sociopaths, but some of them are. And if you want to decrease the room of anti-Semitism, what you need to do is engage and tell them why they're wrong and say that's not actually the facts. Actually, it's very complicated. Actually, what Derek Cooper did actually doesn't matter because either way, you're still in a situation where you put people in camps. Yeah. It's your responsibility.
Well, it's also frustrating because all these people who championed going against the woke ideology and stuff, and thank you for your contribution to that, I guess, during that time period. A lot of you were very late, which is just interesting to me. But that's always a frustrating thing to me. There's like a lot of people that came in late to the party, and then now they're like become part of the Overton window. It's very interesting to me.
Sounds sociopathic to me.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff that was going on in the psychology space and like, it's just, Jordan Peterson, we're here. He was such a valuable contributor to all this dialogue was in the psychology space is that they were calling all of the people that were against the woke ideology mentally ill and stuff.
Yeah.
And they were trying to like do all these like loopholes and frameworks to be able to justify having bad thoughts as being mentally ill and then needing to be like institutionalized or something like that. This was the logic thread at the time.
Noting the language, transphobia, making it into a disease, homophobia, these things, rather than being a set of ideas and value judgments about human behavior, we're going to psychologize you and turn you into a person outside the norm by just casting that
label
on.
Needs to be shunned out. Which is like, this was the area where I was so frustrated with so many people during this like 2017 to 2019, 2020, and then even going into the COVID era, 2020 through 2022, of all the mass cancellations that were going on, is that so many people were just like, well, that guy's outside the norm, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. As like, that person gets cut. Right. That person gets cut. That person gets cut. Is like Stephon Molyneux, Owen Benjamin, et cetera. Like
Alex Jones.
Like, it just kind of like, well, they're just so outside the frame. And it's like, what are they outside the framework on? Mm-hmm. Immigration and trans issues.
Yeah.
It's like, now look where we're standing right now. Right. Now they're still ostracized from society, right?
And
we're like,
well, and there's still cultural touch points that are themselves very hard, right? They're still like holding up the cathedral that when touched will still get you canceled, mm-hmm. right? If you're talking about race and IQ, stuff like that, you're going to have a rough go still to this day.
Although Jordan Peterson can do entire podcasts on it. Which is interesting.
That is interesting. And that might be like a credential thing, right? Mm-hmm. Right. If you're just some random guy talking about it, people are like, wow.
Canada tried to remove his credentials, though.
Yeah, well, that's for talking about climate science, though. But anyways, let's keep going.
Assumes that everyone else, including Smith, is too. Exasperated, he tries to explain that far from being revolutionary, these ideas have been pushed by discredited historians like David Irving for decades. Have you listened to his podcast, though? Rogan interjects. It turns out Murray hasn't, and this is later used as evidence against him after the episode airs. Unlike Murray, I have listened to Cooper's podcasts, including the one about the history of Palestine that people often cite in his defense. He details the persecution of Jews preceding the events he covers, and so he couldn't possibly be anti-Semitic, is their argument. From this, they conclude that he couldn't possibly be a Nazi apologist. The reason they make this logical error is that in the entertainment world, words do not have meanings, they have feelings. And thanks to the woke left's misuse of the word Nazi for the last decade, in Podcastistan, the term is not a descriptive label, but a vague, meaningless insult used to cancel people. Unlike his opponents, Murray clearly understands that the term Nazi apologist has a defined meaning. And the fact that most Nazi apologists are anti-Semitic does not mean you have to be anti-Semitic to fit the description. The Grok definition of a Nazi apologist is someone who defends, justifies, and minimizes the actions, ideology, or atrocities committed by the Nazi regime, often by excusing Nazi policies or promoting revisionist narratives that distort historical facts.
And that's the key question is distorting historical facts. Like, are the things that you're advancing actual history facts, or are they pure value interpretations on top of facts? And are you disagreeing with those value interpretations? Now, there is a set of people who exist in the world who are actively trying to undermine the narrative on World War II because they start with their anti-Semitism and then they look for ways in which to poke holes into the narrative. There are also people, of which I suspect Pat Buchanan was one of them, who look at the historical narrative, feel repulsed by, of course, all of the cultural programming that go into this with regular human beings, and then say, but then find and interpret things about the consequences of these actions that they place value judgments on. And those people are not the same as the first group of people, right? And if you can't distinguish between them, then you can't ever convince the people who are otherwise neutral actors, who are just open, who just aren't dogmatic about this, that your side is the right side until you engage with them. So like this whole, oh, we shouldn't have to because these were debunked 20 years ago. It's like, no, actually you have to because there's a whole new generation up right now. Mm-hmm. Like engage, don't be a coward. It's that simple. So if they're wrong, prove it. I mean, that's the thing is I want them to be, I have every motive and desire for this to be as simple as it's typically portrayed, and good reason to believe that it is in many ways. But you also have to, if you're not defending it, you are going to lose the fight.
There's so many, how to say this? There's so many things around the linguistic word games of how things have adjusted over the last several decades because of the post-World War II era and all the propaganda that's come around with, where it's like the actual anti-Semitism, like Semitism, what is it being Semitic? Like what is a Semitic?
Right.
And like, that's not just Jew. That's also Arab and Phoenician and like that whole region is considered Semitic.
Right.
So like, you know, like the word itself doesn't even really, and how it's properly supposed to be used doesn't really have that power. And this is also another one of those things that like the wokesters always did, is that they kind of like abused these terms and tried to overencompass. And this is why, like, I remember like a decade ago or 8 years ago or so, I remember getting into an argument with a conservative legislator at one point about this exact thing of like anti-Semitism to conservatives is exactly what like racism and transphobia and all this stuff is to liberals. Like I was saying that these are the woke conservatives back then
before James Lindsay.
And it was because every time it was like, I would make an argument about the Fed or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would be met with this, like the only people that care about banking are anti-Semites.
Yeah, right.
And you're just like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Because like a bunch of Jews are in banking positions. It was just like, no, I'm trying to make like an actual argument about monetary policy. And this was the same thing that happened in the Dave Smith, Douglas Murray debate, where Dave Smith is just trying to quote Wolfowitz.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, or he just invoked the term neocon and Douglas Murray is like the N word.
Oh no.
Speaking of, like, you wrote a book called Neocons and Why We Need Them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But like, and then it was like Wolfowitz is like, the only people who bring up Wolfowitz are people who they find wolves are scary. And Itz is a Jewish name, so it's fuel, and it waters fertile ground for the anti-Semites. And you're just like, dude, we're trying to have a dialogue here, and you're just muddying it with this, all this stuff. Like, there's no real contribution that you're making besides like these invoking this this emotional verbiage that is like so deified with religion.
He makes it seem like Paul Wolfowitz was just like some random Jew in the room.
He never made it that high. He was like the deputy director.
And all the positions that we're currently debating right now in the Trump administration, why they're so critical. He was in those positions at critical times at the turn of the Iraq War.
He's part of the dialogue in the advisory roles.
And he's quoting him. So it's not like even if he was low level, but he said something or did something that was very impactful, that doesn't matter. It's literally on him.
It's important to know what types of conversations were happening at the time. Like, we just covered the whole trade war stuff, and I'm giving out like these are the arguments being made by all of the people around, and we should listen to the people around so that we actually know, so that we don't have to just talk shit on the internet. We can actually know what the plans are.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, this is what's being like, we should know what the people were saying at that time. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
You're like,
right. 100%.
It's important to know what's going through people's minds so we can actually make value judgments on what they did, right?
Like, yeah, or at least the public statements that they said and the things that
they
did.
Those are important.
Yeah.
It's important for the whole big picture of everything. But, well, let's keep going.
Since Cooper does precisely this in several appearances on major podcasts, how his series on Palestine will change this reality is clearly as confusing to Murray, who hasn't listened to it, as it is to me.
One more thing. Okay, so the whole, like, he's... the argument as it goes is that because he did a the Israel-Palestine podcast series, Fear and Loathe in the New Jerusalem, he can't be an anti-Semite. And he's trying to say, am I hearing him right? Is he trying to say, well, he still could be?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what he's saying?
Well, like, he's or saying that he's a Nazi apologist. Saying the defenders of Cooper are saying because he said that there were bad things that happened to the Jews, he can't possibly be an anti-Semite because he said both sides of the story.
Right.
Like, that's kind of the argument that he's making.
And I don't think that's exactly correct.
That's his framing of the Cooper defending.
Yeah, argument, I think that it's more like he treated this incredibly contentious issue with such delicacy and rawness of the perspectives and like letting people really see the confrontation of these perspectives that we have confidence that he's done that many times in the past that he will do this in the future. And the prediction is this: Constantine Kissin, will you make a bet? Is the new series, when it comes out, is it going to apologize for Nazi atrocities, or is it going to directly confront them with, you know, what their justifications were, what the complications were, and then navigate them to the same degree that he did Fear and Loathing New Jerusalem? Or is he going to go around and just spit off a bunch of Nazi apologetics?
Well, and here's the thing. It's like, I'm glad, Constantine, you listened to it, but I just know a lot of these people that are engaging in this debate will not listen to it, and they will have a lot of opinions, a.k.a. Douglas Murray, Seth Dillon, all these people that have been going on, like Piers Morgan or Joe Rogan, and talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they have all publicly stated that they don't have to watch it to know what it is, and which isn't that just exactly what the woke did? like, what are we talking about, James Lindsay, with your woke right now?
I don't have to read 12 Rules for Life. I just know it's Nazi propaganda. Yeah. That's what you sound like when you that's do this. It's like,
the only people that care about lobsters are Nazi apologists. Like, yeah, exactly. like this is what you sound like. Not Constantine, because like he's saying, I don't know like how deep he actually went in and read it, but he, or like listened to it, but he's saying he listened to it. But like a lot of the people around this dialogue, that's where
and
they're
he's
at. Right
and he's also, playing a game here where he's kind of teasing at that, like as if Douglas Murray was just exasperated and he's kind of justifying Douglas Murray not listening to it, not doing his core homework if he's going to talk about it.
Well, and it's just, it's maybe worth giving a little bit of like benefit of the doubt as you're going into, like the problem that I would see with Constantine here is like, he's going in with a pre-justified narrative in his head.
Yeah.
And then he's using this as just like, well, anti-Semites sometimes say that. So like, therefore, he's kind of doing Nazi apologensia. Yeah. Like, it's,
you might be watering the ground of it, which is the same thing. And we just had this debate. The debate was, you can say what you want on the internet, and then people can judge for themselves whether or not they agree with it or not. And that's what free speech is.
No, we need to have standards.
You know, because this is the wrong person might hear what you're saying and they'll go commit a trans genocide. That's what you sound like. All right.
Yeah. You want schools to be shot up?
Exactly.
Like it's the same argument. But I mean,
bullshittery.
With all a lot of that stuff, that is a common in a lot of the conservatives that come over to America from Britain tend to often follow those arguments. Mm. And they will follow it's sort of like, do you want like gun control laws or else schools will shoot? Like they'll follow those, like that type of logic is often very pervasive in conservative British people. Like that's just an observation I've noticed.
Well, it's an elitist mindset that comes from Europe, and it's repulsive to us. The credentials are repulsive to us, at least young people in America. So that's another reason. I don't understand why this guy's popular.
Sorry.
Who has? Indeed, one of the main areas of misunderstanding in the discussion is the role of expertise. He doesn't claim to be an expert, is Smith's riposte to Murray's suggestion that Cooper doesn't know what he's talking about. He uses the same defense when Murray questions Smith's own willingness to opine on geopolitics. The central critique of Murray here is that he's arguing from authority, which is what the mainstream media has done for years to gaslight the public about everything from transgenderism to COVID to war. Smith and his supporters argue that the concept of expertise has been so discredited that he, and anyone else for that matter, is entitled to express any view about any issue they want. The audience, they say, can judge these views for themselves. Murray's attempt to dismiss such views on the basis that they don't align with expert opinion is seen as an ineffective argument at best and an attempt at credentialism at worst. There's a sliver of truth to this criticism. Engaging the argument someone is making directly is a much more powerful approach. But to suggest that arguments from authority are entirely invalid is silly. Almost everything you believe is based on an argument from authority.
These are all straw men. It's like, right?
It's like they can't debate Israel-Palestine, so they're just setting up mot after mot after mot after, like, every impediment to get to the actual question of the debate.
Yeah.
I just want to get to the Bailey, Constantine. Just let me get to the Bailey. I just want to get there. Let's go there. Please, God.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's all just so frustrating. It's interesting to me because we're seeing how the Overton window is forming and the neocon types are very much becoming more and more on the edge of one side of the foreign policy debate. And we're watching people like Dave Smith become more welcomed as it's the Overton window. He's like on the edge and
because
becoming
I'm
super popular, but like he's even becoming not on the edge anymore, which is interesting in itself. And there's a lot of panic that's being had. And it's just, and I think this is another big deal. It's just, we're watching there's a reason why all these guys are European. that's all I can say.
I get it.
That's
though.
All I can say. It's like, there's a reason
it,
all these,
you can't
once you see it, you can't, some people are like that with the Jews. I'm like that with the Euros. It's like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Like, they are defending and clinging onto their mythologies as hard as they can because Europe is becoming increasingly like less relevant. And we're just like, and it's like, quick, flood the American podcast market with more Euros. like we're just watching it happen in real time. And it's just
maybe
like,
but it's
a game here that's being played.
This next section on experts, I do think is worth talking about. Cause it is, I think he makes a major error here.
Okay. Here.
Light bulbs, for example, are a fairly unsophisticated and omnipresent part of our lives. Yet the number of people watching this video who are capable of explaining how they work without resorting to arguments from authority will be vanishingly small. I'm not just talking about the fact that most people couldn't explain how electricity works. I'm talking about the fact that almost everyone who can will only be able to do so by quoting the work of other people rather than experiments and research they themselves have conducted. While Rogan seems to side with Smith in this exchange, it is highly unlikely he would adopt the same approach to his own areas of expertise. When it comes to mixed martial arts, his interview guests are the best of the best. Argument. The dazzling array of UFC champions, top MMA coaches, respected trainers, and other experts does not appear to include comedian Dave Smith. There's a popular clip on the JRE YouTube channel in which Smith breaks down why Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. I was unable to find one of him breaking down Brazilian jiu-jitsu moves, despite Smith possessing a similar level of expertise on both subjects.
All right. That is such bullshit. Okay, so Joe Rogan talks about jiu-jitsu with literally everybody. Right? So like, that's dumb. Second, he's talked about it with Dave. I kind of hope Dave Smith does a reaction video to this. Hopefully
he did. Right? He did.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay.
I haven't watched it.
And then on top of that, the division of labor is different than expertise. These are two different concepts. Expertise is a filtering mechanism for the labor market. The division of labor in which we produce things happen differently than that. It happens through comparative advantage in trade. These are different mechanisms for understanding things. One is about the value judgments about whether or not you trust somebody when they cite something, when they say something. It's about the authenticity and authority of that person. It isn't about just, oh, I just defer to them blindly and universally.
Yeah.
The same way that I do when I'm out shopping for wool and I find a wool producer and I like them, so I buy from them. It's a different thing. And when you conflate those, you're saying like, oh, we should, what are you saying? We should only listen to people who have done direct historical research on a thing? Come on. especially given that reading the book about Ukraine, Provoked by Scott Horton, you should go pick it up, is probably something that will get you far further than just listening to Constant Kisten say it, talking about how it was an unprovoked attack, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then having Dave Smith boil that down to a quick story on Joe Rogan to get it to a larger audience, because a lot more people will watch Joe Rogan than will read a book. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing for our social order. And you're opposing that just because he's saying stuff you don't support, not because he does said anything wrong, because you're not defeating anything wrong. In fact, when you debated him, he smashed you on it on Michael Malice's show. So come on.
Well, it's also this thing is like we're all giving narratives here. And there's like narrative games that are being played, and one side has their narrative of the historical events and another side has their narrative of the historical events. And we're trying to like assess those narratives appropriately. Yeah. And the thing is, when I look at a lot of these wars that we've been engaging in, whether it be in the Middle East or whether it be Ukraine and stuff like that, the guys who are tending to be more so on the anti-war position, they're giving more context and framing to the underpinnings of how everything came to be. Well, I'm finding the people who are making the justifications for those wars being very like shallow. And it's just like Ukraine unprovoked or Russia unprovoked and all this stuff. And you're just like, I would like to see from these people giving much more context underneath that.
Yeah.
And like, that's what I'm looking for. And that's why when I brought up the Bob Murphy, I'm excited for the debate between you're expecting Douglas Murray to bring more context.
Yeah.
And there just was none of that. I actually saw a guy, I saw a video of a guy, I sent it into our group chat, a video of a guy, he took the entire transcript of the Joe Rogan debate and fed it through ChatGPT and had it and just told ChatGPT mathematically analyze like who contended with more arguments and things like that. And it was like ChatGPT believed that just objectively speaking, Dave Smith contended with more arguments and directly addressed Douglas Murray's points. Well, typically Douglas Murray just avoided things and shifted topics. And it even made the statement in there that when Dave Smith kind of made a pivot, it was to contextualize and bring things back around to it.
Yeah.
Where Douglas Murray just like made hard pivots that were much more of avoidances.
Yes.
And like, that's what I'm looking for in these debates where it's like, if you guys really want, like, come justify it to us. Like, the onus is kind of on you because you're the ones that are like, money needs to be spent here. People are dying. Like, people have to die.
You got to kill all these babies.
I don't care how, freaking misfit patriot, dude. Yeah. And like, I don't care how many babies it takes to die. Like, we saw these.
Seems psychopathic.
Seems a little psychopathic.
Yeah.
Maybe a tinge. Was arrested for beating up an elderly man. It's interesting.
Okay. like,
maybe some psychopathy going on. I don't know. I'm not a trained expert.
Yeah.
I'm not like Jordan Peterson.
Haven't been there.
I've never been. I've never beaten up an elderly man. So I don't know what the context might have been for that. But like you kind of see where I'm going with this, where it's just like, I find the arguments to be so shallow.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's frustrating about this. Like, I could be open to going to war if I felt like it was justified. But like, you have to justify it to me. And there's no justification that's happened.
And that's the real tragedy of this is after effects that I've seen from the Douglas Murray debate and versus Dave Smith has been a bunch of Douglas Murray crush Dave Smith.
He called libertarians bisexual, which is true. It is true.
But regardless, like, it's just like bland dunking, not like this was a great point. And what I have seen on the opposition.
Feels orchestrated too.
Yeah.
Like it feels very orchestrated.
Yeah. And or this stuff where it's like, we're going to talk about the conversation, not about the conversation.
Yeah. The conversation around the conversation.
Exactly. Right? It's like you're avoiding the core thing. And because you know you lost there. That's my suspicion. And just prove me wrong, please. Just bring a freaking argument.
Well, and that's it's very nice for the people who want gatekeeping to try to impose standards when they can't make any arguments.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to impose these standards that like, we don't have to make arguments if there's a gatekeep and nobody can contend with the argument. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of how it feels.
And the real tragedy here is that his whole setup is that that's how the legacy press was doing it in order to not have to contend.
And he said he was wrong
issues.
About that, which
and
is
he
interesting.
And he was wrong about that when it comes to the internet was a solution because he isn't getting the results he wants. This is consequentialism. Mm-hmm. He has decided that what matters is people believe the right things. They believe the wrong things during COVID. Now they're starting to believe it because of the corporate press. Now they're believing the wrong things now because of new media. Therefore, we need to have a conversation about standards, not about the war.
I would be curious, where was Constantine during COVID?
I don't know.
What was his opinion?
Yeah, I don't know.
I could venture a guess. Yeah. I know exactly what
I bet they were mainstream.
There's a lot of these people. Like, it's just always worth noting. There's a lot of these people that when it matters, they were very wrong. And then once it stops mattering, all of a sudden they're right.
Yeah.
You know, like they shift positions and they just pretend like they were always there. And I would guess, I don't follow Constantine enough, but I would guess I know where he was in a lot of that.
Well, we'll see. Fact check us.
He probably was, I almost question if he was begging for standards in some way. Like, yeah. I kind of question. So
I wonder.
I might ask Grok. He's so useful and he tried to pull up Grok definitions. I should maybe ask Grok about that.
Yeah, let's go a little bit further.
Smith and Rogan are irked when Murray expresses his befuddlement that Smith has become a prominent voice in the debate about Israel and Palestine without ever having visited the Middle East. The shock at the idea that someone ought to see things with their own eyes before commenting on them is palpable. Indeed, in the aftermath of the debate, Smith promoted a popular video in which Murray's statements to this effect are contrasted with his previous ridicule of the concept of lived experience. This is very low-quality thinking. If you do not see things with your own eyes, your opinions are by definition not your own. They are an agglomeration of opinions and facts you have gathered from other sources whose veracity you cannot properly evaluate.
Now, what really frustrates me about this is that he's now going on to, well, actually, yeah, you do have to go there. Like, that's your case? That's the most absurd case. Because there's all kinds of ways in which going to the place can actually not inform you, in fact, manipulate you, especially if you go on an IDF-sponsored press tour, right? Maybe if the government sponsors you to write a book, to cover the country so you can write your book.
I wonder what your coverage is going to look like.
You might get a perspective, a specific perspective. Now, if you read all kinds of different things, from many different value judgment sides on the same phenomena, and then come to a conclusion about the way you your perspective on the world based upon your value judgments, that might give you a clearer view of things than being propagandized by a government service, such as a press tour. Tell me where we're wrong here, right? Like, I've gone to many states in the United States. I wouldn't claim that I now therefore have some authority to talk about Atlanta just because I've been there a couple times. You know what I mean? Like, it's absurd. Like, it depends on what things you're grabbing from. And you're like, oh, you can't know anything. Like, this is like the most extreme, like postmodernism. You can't know anything because that comes from somebody else. And it's all narrative. But that's not true. There's all kinds of things you can know. Right? Depends on the historical standards of the people that you're reading and citing and building your case off of. If they're wrong, say it. Say how they're wrong.
I'm going to note, I made claims about Constantine and COVID, and I made an assessment. I'm actually kind of surprised. It seemed like he was pretty early on being against lockdowns and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Seems like so. There we go. Good job, Constantine.
Yay.
It does remind me, actually, going back to what you were saying, Dave, it makes me think of when Tim Dillon was on Rogan afterwards, and he's just sitting there, like, "Can we just go to wars? Can we do that? What's this war tourism business? How do I get in on that?" Right? It's like, do they just let me in, or do I have to come back and spout off what they're saying? I should talk about, you know,
because
like that's the thing is like these people come in, like, and this is the Israel propaganda tour that everyone does. It's sort of like what Thomas Massie talked about, where everybody has an AIPAC guy. You go to Congress, you're given the trip. I talked with a congressman at one point about this trip which is interesting, but it is one of those things is like you enter Congress right there and you're immediately shipped off and you get to go kiss the wall and you get to do the thing. You get the IDF movie that is portrayed in front of you. Like you get that whole perspective, right? Like this is how propaganda and influence operations are performed. Like it's not like you're only, and it's like your experience, you're just getting one side of the story.
Right.
Right. Like, like if you want to have the lived experience, like, did you go past the points, Douglas Murray, or were you just offered up to the point where you're allowed to go see?
Well, like, what's so frustrating about the checkpoint things too is that there's been so much documentation in Israeli press about the policies around what they let in, what they don't let out.
Yeah.
To the point where there was a debate about putting Palestine on a diet, Yeah. We're saying about they're limiting the amount of calories that can go in. This is during the before October 7th, to be clear. This is the dynamic which establishes October 7th.
Which helps, does again, not, contextualize everything.
Yeah, right? If you talk about that and be like, well, actually, that wasn't quite right. That's actually misreported or something like that. Then you can get into it. Instead, you're just ignoring all those things and just saying, you're a bad person because you're not qualified to talk about that. And for some reason, you're speaking. We shouldn't listen to you. It's bullshit.
Something that a lot of this reminds me of, too, is so back when the libs were the cultural center of everything.
Yeah.
They never really had to contend with arguments. So their arguments got really weak. Mm. So conservatives and libertarian types, their arguments became very strong because they're having to like sharpen the sword constantly. And they're having to do these debates. And like, you have guys like, you know, Charlie Kirk kind of like training young people on college campuses through Turning Point USA. And you have all these people like their blades are getting sharpened because they're constantly under attack all the time, and they have to kind of defend their beliefs, and they also have to know what the other people are believing.
Right.
And libertarians are kind of like always in that standpoint because they're always like the bisexual children on the outside, as Douglas Murray would say. You know? But what happens with the Israel context, and unfortunately, the lefty arguments ring really hollow. And it's hard because if you're kind of like skeptical of Israel, you're often like now being put in place with the lefties and you have to like contend with like their retarded arguments.
What am I doing with
stuff.
All these blue hair people?
You kind of hate that. Like it's kind of sucky. But somebody like Dave Smith, he's actually like contended with all of the argumentation and has done quite a bit of research in this area where he's like able to, he knows the context and he's able to eloquently speak about that context where a lot of people like, it felt like when I watched the Douglas Murray side, it's just like Douglas Murray has never heard these arguments before.
Yes. Yeah.
And which puts him at a severe disadvantage in this thing. So he has to do all these.
So topics. Rather than defending the Iraq war, he goes, Wolfowitz.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're watering some suspicious ground.
Which is what the wokesters always did. Because this is like, you're just afraid of trans people. Becomes that, right? Where Dave Smith is actually articulating positions that you can contend with, but just they've never heard the argument, so they've never had to think about it.
And exactly right. And that is the virtue of freedom of speech. Like the whole idea, going back to Smith and Mill and the arguments from the classical liberals, was that the process of direct good faith engagement raises the standard so the cream rises to the top. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you have the best opportunity for discovery of truth. And you and your crew on this side of the podcast war are doing the opposite. You are not seeking truth. You're trying to censor the people who you don't like, not by actually calling for censorship, by a circuitous route of saying you're not actually qualified. Don't listen to them because they are not saying the thing that we think they should say.
Well, and there is a thing here too, because you know, back in the original cancellation days, a lot of the argumentation that was being made against people that were getting canceled was like, well, we're not arguing that the government do it. We're just arguing that like the social media companies create standards on this. Now, we now have the Twitter files on the back end and we see all this stuff that was going on and the government was actively involved in these things, right? Mm-hmm. But like this was the route that was being taken at that time too. Like you're making the same arguments.
Right.
The DNA pattern of your argumentation is very similar to theirs.
Yes.
And that's the thing that is very concerning here.
And that's the difference between freedom of speech as simply a legal standard versus a value.
Like a cultural value.
That you actually value. They actually like look for opposition who's saying something interesting, is saying something with some strength and some, you know, some charisma that you can then contend with. That's the opportunity. And by failing to even show up, by spending 62% of your time as per ChatGPT, avoiding the issue and trying to talk about anything but Israel-Palestine, you're not helping your case. You're making it worse.
Well, and one of the hard things here too, because like really Dave Smith is like one of the most mild-mannered people on this side of the argument. It is hard because, and this is where like the psychopath argument rings for a lot, will ring for a lot of people, is because you do have a lot of people underneath all of this that are going maybe too far across the bounds of the Overton window, I will say generously.
Remember the BLM poster like that was like celebrating the guy on the flying the parachute? Like it was like they were like war heroes. It was like, oh God, that's disgusting. Like that's terrible. Don't, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's exactly like, you do have end up having the people who are like, now on college campuses, like chanting "Death to America" and things like that stuff muddies the water and makes
it way harder.
To a point where you're like, that feel like it feels one, it's counterproductive and people are getting mixed up into it. But yeah. It's two is like, you always wonder, is there counterinsurgency type of stuff that's going on with that? It's always a question that has to be had.
Well, and also
which is similar to like the J6 stuff. Like, was there things that were being made to try to make this into a thing that's more than it was, you know? It's like the same type of stuff that's going on, which then makes it difficult for the Dave Smiths of the world or us or something like that to contend with this, because you're now kind of being looped in with these people over here,
right?
Because you're having similar arguments, but it's just like, I also don't like those people either, man. Like, so like, it's, you know,
that's just all over this field. And people get over the skis and they say dumb shit, like, call it out when you see it. You know, but that doesn't mean everyone who disagrees with you on the topic is the same as that person.
But there's also an argument to be made, and this is maybe like a Renegades History of the United States type of Thaddeus Russell argument of like, sometimes those extremes are necessary to pull the conversation, the Overton window, into a dynamic. Because now a guy like Dave Smith is becoming a superstar that is talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it... You know, and the unfortunate thing is like that Overton window shift might be partially due to him being allowed to do that because of the crazies. Mm-hmm. You know, like there might be an argument there, which is just like,
change comes.
That's more of just like an interesting window of how Overton windows are formed. Right.
That doesn't mean you have to, just because that's the way it happens, though, that doesn't prescribe a normative value to say, therefore, it's great for people to say offensive shit to Jews and all that kind of jazz. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, no. We really could get here to the degree that people are engaging good faith and not raising temperatures, but maybe it's necessary, or maybe the net effect is just that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One more go. Yep. We'll see where else he goes with it.
Doesn't necessarily make them wrong. Indeed, most of our opinions about most things are not our own. You know why? Because we get them from people we consider to be authorities on the subject in question. You might call them experts. The great trick being deployed here is to allege that experts can't be trusted while relying on a different set of experts.
I gotta stop it again. this is the frustrating thing about this, because the critique against experts, and this is just a thing where language is very shallow sometimes. The critique on experts is it's much more of the culture of this particular expert class. Mm. Like, we all want there to be experts in particular fields that we can trust.
Right.
Like, we want that. Like, I think that there is a hierarchy of expertise that exists that should be trusted. It's just like, there's this culture of expertise that is like very faux and fabricated, and it's all this fugazi. Like, that's, okay. That's the thing that's a word. Like, we're... It's like, we want new experts.
Yeah.
Like, that's more so what we want. It's not that we don't believe that there should ever be any experts or any, like, like, this is the straw man that you're setting up here. Like, that's the frustrating thing.
Yeah. And additionally, that they're drawing from experts. Like, you could have a debate between Norm Finkelstein and his equivalent on the pro-Israel side. And those debates have happened. It was on Lex Fridman. Destiny showed up for some reason.
And expert.
And it was... What it was. Mm-hmm. It was a good podcast. I thought it was pretty good. It was pretty a little dry.
Yeah. And I had a hard time listening to that one, I remember.
The reason why we have comedians and Constantine and all these other people is because they're more charming and interesting to talk to. So they draw from experts so that they can package it for a wider audience. But not everyone's me. Not everyone likes that dry stuff. So that's the media landscape, man. You don't get to police which experts count. That's not how it works. So grow up.
But well, there is a
make
thing.
Make the argument.
There is a line, like a thread that exists often of how ideas come to society. Like, the stuff that's more in the think tanky wonkiness, that's not for everyone, and it requires certain people and cultural figures often to expand upon that and make it more digestible for the average person.
Right.
And that, to me, is the role that Dave Smith plays. It's the role that Constantine plays.
Yes.
Right? Like, you're playing the same role here. Is that you are the digester. Mm-hmm. You're the one that makes things more digestible for the average person. Mm-hmm. And some people are much better at that than others. And mm-hmm. those people are there's a hierarchy in those roles. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think we're seeing people like Dave Smith rise to the occasion on this, is because he's become very good at that for the people that he kind of represents. Like, he has a constituency, you could say.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, final. Wait, whoops. I got frustrated. And
on Ukraine, the non-expert Smith is using the ideas of people he considers experts, like John Mearsheimer and Jeffrey Sachs. On World War II, the non-expert Cooper deploys the arguments of people he considers experts, like David Irving, and so on and so forth.
Pat Buchanan,
all opinions are valid and should be given a hearing, scream the people whose entire media diet is made up of people who only push the narrative they prefer. This is where Smith obtains the arguments he makes about countries he's never visited, from other people. And the arguments are then judged not on whether they're true, something Smith does not have the ability to assess, but on whether they sound true. This is why he routinely makes basic cognitive errors of the kind I described the last time he and I sparred over my viral Israel video. As for experience, the woke concept of lived experience.
I got another part of the internet dialogue around this that's been so frustrating to me is the people with the Israeli flags in their bios all being like, the only reason Dave Smith is tweeting about it is because he's doing damage control in the aftermath. You know, and then you have Douglas Murray have an entire article in the New York Post in the aftermath, because that's more of his venue for talking about these things. And it's like the same thing where it's like, yes, you had a conversation after your debate, and it's like, was it for damage control or was it to further expound upon? Like, this is one of those things that like was so frustrating to see online.
Oh, it's these so people, obviously just ops.
Like, well, it's just like, obviously, this was a massively viral moment. Of course, Dave Smith is going to be trying to capture the attention and continue to help with the framing on his side and not let you just run control over the narrative of over who won and who not. Like, it's so weird. Like, but these are the tactics.
We're in the content making business here, guys. Like, the goal is to make content. So they're making
also,
content.
Yeah, but it's also like the context that these people are using for this. It's like, it's so blatantly shameful for anybody that is willing to put like 60 IQ points towards it. and like anybody that's willing to do that, it looks so bad.
Right.
And it's the same thing. Like, I had people that I know that don't really care about Israel, Palestine, mm-hmm. or Ukraine, Russia. They don't care about foreign policy. And they listen to the Douglas Murray, Dave Smith debate, and they don't really have ties to either of them. Mm-hmm. And I had people tell me that Douglas just seemed bad. Mm. Like, it's just like he was off-putting throughout the entire thing. And like, that's really when it comes down to it, I don't really necessarily think that Dave Smith won the debate. I just think Douglas lost.
I don't think Dave Smith thinks he won the debate. I think he agrees.
I think he wanted to have a bigger conversation.
An actual on the stuff. And if this isn't damage control, what Constant is doing right now isn't damage control for all the BS that made
that cultural milieu.
That made Murray come off so bad.
Yeah.
Then what is this? Right? Especially in the meantime, he has to, you know, do all the little tricks and all the little strawmen that he has to pull together to actually make this video.
Like, I found the debate to be incredibly like boring. Like, I didn't enjoy it. I had to take multiple pauses to it because I can't deal with this right now.
I felt
it's
the opposite. I just loved it. It was like watching the opposition just run off the field over and over and over again. It was like,
to me, it was like, point. I know that this is an incredibly important moment, just culturally speaking, and I know and I have to watch it. Like, there's like a duty as somebody who's in an upstart podcast and stuff like that. Yeah, like, there's a duty where I have to watch it. But like, it was hard for me to get through.
Oh, man. I was just like, so rooting for Team Dez. Like, oh, he gave up again. Nice. You know, like every time that happened, I was just like, nice.
Well,
nice,
and when we spent for the first 40 minutes of doing this like lecture campaign
thing,
like that was one of those areas where, and it's also just in the aftermath of this whole thing. And we'll maybe kind of end on these thoughts because we don't have to get through the entire video, but like in the aftermath of all this stuff of like the cancel Joe Rogan stuff that's coming from the James Lindsay's of the world.
Right.
Like this, all of you people should be sucking Rogan's dick right now for how much he brought you onto the like main stage.
Yes.
And it's like, what are you doing? It's so astonishing to watch the flip, like the switch flip mm-hmm. on this. It's like, you owe this man so much. And now you're like in this like cancel campaign. You have to standardize your thing, your content. That thing you were doing and how you run that operation, like you should do it differently.
Yeah,
now. Like it's like, it's so disrespectful to me mm-hmm. that you would be doing this. Like it's astonishing to me mm-hmm. to see that. And that's the area where you're like, something bigger is going on here.
Yep.
And I don't quite know what it is, but there's something there.
Yes.
But like my conspiracy brain is going on to just like watch all these people who are newcomers and then came in and shaped the Overton window in such a way as all the old people kind of got banned and moved out. And now you guys came in and are now trying to, through the help of Rogan, and now you're trying to shape the conversation entirely around that, and trying to, like, the guy who brought you into the space, you're now saying that he needs to control, have a little bit better quality control.
Yeah,
It's very suspicious.
And they would be just as pissed if he had Norman Finkelstein on as anyone else.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wouldn't matter. There's nothing you can do to appease these guys. They just want you to shut up about Israel-Palestine. They're trying to make it uncomfortable for you. They're trying to make you not do what you otherwise would do, which is have people on to talk about it.
And the thing is, I've read most of your guys' books, too. Yeah. And it's like... I followed you throughout all this stuff. I watched you guys. Like, I don't like seeing what you guys are becoming.
Right.
That's the thing. Is like, I was a fan of James Lizzie's books. Mm-hmm. I read his books. I thought the hoax stuff was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was such like a, it was actually like a very powerful moment in cutting through and all the stuff that was going on with the expert class and scientific and peer review journals and things like that. Like, it was just like, I thought it was very useful. I thought that there was very useful, like, dissection of postmodern thought and stuff. Like, the Jordan Peterson phenomenon. I loved the Jordan Peterson phenomenon in those earliest days. It was like his Genesis lectures, all these things that, but like, what you guys are doing is now something else. And you're like straying beyond your bounds. That's the other area where it's like, you're straying beyond what your normal position was and what made everybody like you guys. And that's what has everybody kind of irked.
Here. Yeah. Well, and especially because it is so self-damaging and you're kind of like, what's the motive?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they were doing this and they were factually wrong, it would be a different thing, right? They engaged with the facts and they got something wrong, or they did it and then they just lost. But because they're doing it in this shaming, finger wagging, moral superiority kind of way,
it feels gross. It feels really gross.
It gets extra gross. And then you got to feel bad for, you know, Liam. And you guys are still watching this, you definitely got to check out Liam's breakdown of the Jordan Peterson Rogan debate, because he goes through and reacts in a bunch to it, and spends 2 hours doing it, and is very, very thorough and really good. I think he agrees with me. The entire thing was a subtweet about the Douglas Murray debate. Like, everything parallels it, but they never actually mention them beyond just the little bit up front. And then everything is about these issues and how they apply. And in every case, Joe is doing a better job of applying Peterson's own ideas to the scenario.
Yeah.
And that's the tragedy of it, right? Like, you hate to see it. You just.
Well, and it is funny because, like, you know, like, one of our biggest clips way back in the day was me saying that Jordan Peterson had the Socrates of our time.
Yeah.
But it is also remember the context is, like, I'm a very Nietzschean individual, mm-hmm. and Nietzsche's exact thing was that Socrates betrayed his own thoughts. Mm. And he had a massive critique on Socrates is that like he had a lot of really good ideas and things like that, but then he was like a betrayal to his own thing when he took the hemlock. Mm. And like, in a lot of ways, my Socrates thing still kind of plays out there. He took the pills, he took the paycheck, he did the stuff. And it's like, there's a question of, was he always that person or did he change? Like, that's maybe up for interpretation on that. But like, it's unfortunate to see him. Like, I didn't actually listen to the entire thing of the Jordan Peterson debate. I've only seen the psychopath, like, 6-minute clip.
Yeah.
I tried to listen to it, and it's just like, I have a hard time listening to Peterson anymore. Like, he feels so broken to me, and I don't like that energy. Mm. Like, there's like a broken energy about him that is very hard for me to watch for some reason. Like, it's just like, not like he was in the past. Like, right. I thought that he was very, like, life affirming and full of life before. Yeah. And now he just feels like broken, and it feels very strange.
It's a different vibe. I don't know. I mean, overall, there was some really insightful stuff to that, but it was a real bummer. We talked about it on the podcast this last Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, anyways. We'll call that skiff there.
Yeah.
Bunch of ranting. Constantine kissing boys. imagine Constantine watches this and he's just like, I don't kiss boys.
Yeah. Why do these guys keep accusing me of being gay? Well, it's just your name, buddy. We're just making remember,
it was a skiff episode where there was something that was like said in a thing that we were.
It was a Joe joke. I remember Joe.
No,
said
it was me. I was the one that did it where I was like, no kissing boys.
Yeah.
But it was like, you couldn't get his name right. And there was like the way that when we pause frame, like we paused the thing and like the way he was staring at his co-host or something that it was like, it was very, I can't remember exactly what happened, but anyways, that'll be our skiff episode.
Peace. Join the Discord. Go like, subscribe, do all the things. Catch you later.
All right.